The Football Show on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power. Join the Save Our Shirt movement today. More at saveourshirt.co.uk.
I'm prepared to do anything I can to make my country again.
Do it then.
What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
Welcome along to Thursday's football show. Nathan and Dan in studio. Europa League action ongoing. Arsenal cruising towards a second straight win. They are 3-0 up with the second half just getting underway against Standard Liège. Gabriel Martinelli with two goals in the space of 90 seconds. Joe Willock with a goal as well. So Arsenal well on course to top that group in the other game. Eintracht Frankfurt, Arsenal beat 3-0 first time out. 1-0 up away at Vitória de Guimarães. Also, at the moment, it is Celtic who lead Cluj by a goal to nil. Edouard with the goal on 20 minutes. So Celtic, after their opening draw, looking for a first win and on course for that. Earlier, Manchester United held to a scoreless draw by AZ Alkmaar and hanging on at the end for Manchester United. Wolves, through Willy Bolly, scored in the final moments of the game to beat Besiktas by a goal to nil. And Rangers were beaten by 2-1 in their game against Young Boys. They conceded with pretty much the last kick of the game. Dan McDonald, eyes glued to the television because Ciara McGeehan has just been in action in the 1500-metre semi-finals.
She's come fifth. I think that might be enough to get through. It was a top five that progressed. I'm not sure. She did finish fifth. She was,
It's a big break for you, Dan.
Yeah, I've really taken off my athletics. But I listened to the interviews from Ciara McGeehan yesterday.
She's great.
She got through. And I know she's been in here before and spoke very well. She sort of was pretty bunched until the last lap, and she was sort of pretty prominent all the way.
But yeah, top five needed to reach the final.
Yeah, she was actually comfortable enough, to be honest, in the top five as well. She did finish fifth, and the first four pulled away a bit. But I don't know, sometimes these semi-finals and heats can be a bit deceptive. She was pretty comfortable.
4:15:49, Ciara McGeehan finishes fifth in her semi-final, and she will race in the 1500 metres final at the World Athletics Championships in Doha. So that very much ticking the box for Ciara McGeehan as to what she wanted to achieve. On the football show, we'll keep an eye on that Europa League, and it's not getting any better for Manchester United. They're at Newcastle. Clash of two crisis hit clubs on Sunday.
Crisis is just default in Newcastle, though. It's not actually... It's just normal. It's just.
When was the last time they weren't in crisis? They had a good 18 months of Benitez of just dullness.
Well, yeah.
Which is worse as a Newcastle fan? Which should they hate more, the boredom or the despair?
But see, Benitez, the best years were the year in the Championship. Mm. They've had some really good promotion years under Benitez and Houghton, but then to get to the stage of, well, can we keep hold of this manager and, you know, where are we going with this person? So with Benitez, it was like a relationship. It was like, well, actually, can we keep him? Are you going to go? Is this working out?
I'm going to be at St James's Park on Sunday for Newcastle against Manchester United.
Who have you got with you?
David Myler.
Oh, Myler. Does he live in the region? Or
I think he's still living in Hull.
Yeah.
So desperate to get out, I'd imagine, and get up to Newcastle for the day. Will he get a warm welcome as a former Sunderland man?
Didn't Pardew push him / have his incident with him while Newcastle manager?
But push him, have an incident with him.
Was it headbutt him? I think I headbutt him, but I wasn't sure. He did headbutt him, yeah. But would that be sort of a badge of honour? You know, as though, well, we all got a bit, we all ran out of steam with Pardew.
We all partied.
Yeah.
That one was at the KC Stadium, not at St James's Park, so he won't be haunted by the memory of what happened when Alan Pardew headbutted
him. He'll probably get an indifferent. I mean, it's not as if he... I don't know that he particularly antagonised them at any point. Like, Myler had such a pretty unfortunate career to a degree in that, like, he had good spells at clubs, but probably didn't build up enough of a head of steam anywhere, you know. Like, he couldn't have been a hate figure for Newcastle fans while at Sunderland. You know,
not automatically a hate figure?
If you played for them?
No. Is the rivalry not that extreme?
He might get a pat. Like, if he was brought on as a sub for, say, another team, I know he's retired now, but would he get a pantomime boo? I mean, maybe. It's like that great time years ago, wasn't it, when the Ireland fans were booing who they thought was Peter Lovenkrantz for Denmark because he played for Rangers. But it was another player. It was Peter Madsen or someone, a completely innocent. But it was sort of half-hearted booing. It was like, I better do this.
We once brought Steve Howie to commentate on the Sunderland game. Steve Howie is not popular in Sunderland because Howie was born in Middlesbrough, played for Newcastle, and his brother played for Sunderland.
Ah.
So for whatever reason,
how heavy was it? I can't think of his name.
He really wasn't. We drove him straight to the door of the media centre.
That it was that hostile.
It seems to be.
Yeah.
Hopefully, David Myler's parking somewhere close by and just
he'll be grand.
Just hoping everything will be okay. They were preoccupied with other things.
You know,
possibly.
Just he's probably bonded with him that way. Myler tends to be diplomatic enough in his dealings. I'd say he's probably. I can't imagine he's hated.
It's going to be an interesting game, though, because, well, Newcastle are at home. St James's Park will be packed for United coming to town. And as bad as they've been, and they've been pretty bad, Newcastle, you do just wonder, can they pull something together? We're going to talk to George Culkin about this in the week that was. It seems Steve Bruce lost a rag, to put it mildly, with the players after the 5-0 defeat against Leicester. But I was at Spurs Stadium earlier in the season when Newcastle went there and won.
Won, yeah.
And showed a real... It was a Rafa Benitez-style performance. So solid at the back, caught them on the counter-attack. Very good structure. And like, you watched them against Leicester last week and wonder where that is.
Mm.
Maybe Steve Bruce is just the problem. But if United don't win at St James's Park, considering how bad Newcastle have been.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah, no, that's it. There's no good way. All these Manchester United games at the moment seem like tribute act games, don't they? You know, like Newcastle and Manchester United, with all due respect to the commentary, tune in, it'll be good. But it should
have... Anytime you start a sentence with all due respect.
All due respect. But you know what I mean? Like, it's the Newcastle and Manchester United, you hear that fixture...
Oh, Sky, you're going to have Philippe Albert in studio.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Or John Beresford or someone, you know.
Warren Barton. Let's just go through all the...
Yeah.
What a great team, though.
It evokes a certain image, you know, Newcastle, you know, when that was a game of, like, real substance, like the Manchester United-Arsenal game on Monday. And now it's just like... Oh, Steve Castellano. Well, I mean, yeah, who's in a worse crisis? You know, is it going to change the story of either season dramatically? I guess if Newcastle got a result, it might.
Oh, if Newcastle get a result,
it will lift.
It takes United to another level.
Well, yeah, but if United even win there, is it really going to? It's going to look, well, this is a corner.
It's going to be the international break, and then after the international break, they play Liverpool.
Exactly. So it's a short-term stay of execution, really.
That is the game.
But of course, if you're going to change a Manchester United manager, you're going to do that thing that clubs always do, and you don't bring them in for a first game against Liverpool, because then they're going to start off with a defeat. So actually, really, this is always the way. Like, if you want to figure out where a manager might get the heave-ho, have a look at the fixture list.
Got sacked after the Liverpool game last season, didn't
he? Yeah, after. Mm. So what was up next? A nice run of winnable games to get the new manager off to the wheel with a great start. So what you want to do is look at the fixtures and find the next generous run of games. Where is there two back-to-back games where they look like they should win, and that's when the new guy's got a great chance of coming in.
Alan Pardew was banned for 7 games and fined £160,000 by Newcastle.
By Newcastle?
For the headbutt. By Newcastle and the FA.
160 grand.
Whew. In fairness, he did headbutt him.
It's not great conduct.
That is, in the 26 years of the Premier League, the most controversial incident involving a manager and a player.
Is it?
100%. I can't think of another occasion that a manager has assaulted a player.
Yeah, I guess so, actually.
Anyways, this is the preview sort of with Myler.
Oh, yeah,
memories.
Yeah, 160k. That's football fines.
It's not an 8-year deal.
Football fines generally don't fit the crime relative to, say, earnings and so on, but like 160k now for Pardew. I'm sure he was on a great contract, but you do the sums on it. You know, that's a couple of months, take home or whatever.
Well, like, not even that. Alan Pardew was on an incredibly low salary by all accounts.
That's
at Newcastle. Like a couple of grand a month sort of salary. It was all incentive driven. So that's why he got this 8-year deal. It was a very low basic salary. Everything was on results.
So that's what I'm thinking. Like 160k would have been a fair old chunk. Now the club might have, paid some for it. I assume they have some deal factored in that they might not all pay their own
fines. So many questions.
Listen, this stuff, you might as well just don't even bother with the first half of the game. Just stay downstairs in the
Phoenix
media centre.
Do a Phoenix Flame style recreation of the moment.
Yeah,
if only we were at Hull Stadium.
He can play the role of Myler, obviously.
Yeah. Then who'll I be?
Who'll do Pardew?
Watching a naked Tony Pulis headbutting James Beattie in a dressing room brawl has been described as a spectacle by Stoke captain Ryan Shawcross. The incredible fight, thought to have happened in the changing room at the Emirates after Stoke were beaten 2-0, was brought up in a Twitter Q&A.
Sorry, just read out the first sentence there again.
Watching a naked Tony Pulis headbutting James Beattie in a dressing room brawl.
Great sentence. You got all that in a Twitter Q&A.
Sorry, I'm talking about managers and players. There's got to be a Roy story.
Well, I mean, this is what I'm thinking. I mean,
But again, all that was behind
opposition
players. This was in the middle of a match.
Like karate kicking a tackling sport, for example. I mean, that's not wild. You know, that's more behind, that's like the hairdryer treatment of a different, of a very different kind.
Arsenal have gone 4-0 up. Ceballos has added a fourth. So Arsenal, beaten finalists in the Europa League last year, cruising through the group stage this year. They're playing Standard Liège this evening. So we are going to talk Newcastle with George Culkin in a moment. Some of the other stories, didn't get a huge opportunity to touch on the Ireland under 21 squad. It's this night next week they play Italy in that sold out game. And the very fact it was sold out was a talking point for Stephen Kenny yesterday. Stephen Kenny's brilliant when he gets into a flow about something he's very passionate about, and the state of stadiums in Ireland is something he's always been passionate about, even when he was Dundalk manager.
Yeah.
The air of frustration and resignation that would come over him when he had to talk about going back to Oriel Park and the standard of the facilities. This time around, he was talking about the lack of quality stadiums and the lack of ambition.
Yeah, he did make some good points. It was clearly something he had in his mind. Like, people will get to know more about Stephen Kenny's press conference, I guess, strategy over time, in that he might take a question and slightly on a slight tangent will just bring up something that he's decided he's wanted to bring up that day, which is something he's always very good at as a Dundalk manager.
So what was the question that's
I can't actually remember what it was. This is the thing. I don't think it was, Stephen, what do you think of the Daily Men Park project? It was more a question about, I think, you know, maybe something general about, well, you know, it's great, isn't it great that the game is sold out? And his point is, well, the Tala game next Thursday, you know, 8,000 capacity, but we could have sold it out twice over. And then basically he went off and, well, isn't it frustrating that we have no middle ground stadiums in this country, i.e. it's Aviva, and then you're down to Tala. Now, Tala is going to get a fourth stand and there's going to be a pretty cool venue by the end of that, but it's still going to be whatever, 10, 12,000, I guess, when that's done. But he just went off on a slight tangent saying, well, and a bit of it is him with his FEI hat on, but I don't think it's an unfair point to make that. There's a lot of talk now about the state funding to the FEI being frozen. He said, well, but when it wasn't frozen, and when there was a perception that there was no issues with corporate governance at the FEI in the eyes of the government, that what was the government actually doing for football then? He spoke about stadiums and other sports that have, you know, tens of millions of overruns, never mind, you know, costs. Someone said, Parky Keevy, he said, well, it's not for me to say what I could be talking about then. But he was saying that they're still scratching around to get a few quid together for Finn Harps to get this stadium in Stranorder, which seems to have been under construction since Live Aid or something, you know, at this point. It's like it's just been going on forever. So, I think he made his point sort of quite reasonably that, you know, we need more ambition, that this Dalyman Park plan, which is now a 6,000-seater, I think there is some complications to do with planning and the area, but just saying that really, I mean, you go to other countries around Europe and you see great facilities and we're supposed to be excited about a 6,000-capacity stadium that might be done in 2023 or 2024.
There is a balance to get, though, when it comes to stadium size, because you don't want a white elephant. You don't want a 22,000-seater stadium that Bowes are getting 4,000 people for, and the odd time you'll get 20,000 people to a match.
I think that's a leap, though. I think, and I don't know if he was talking about that size of venue, but you look at Tala now. I remember when Tala was constructed, and some things in Tala were done, I think, and I mean, it was a 3,000-seater at first, and then it gradually went to like the 6, and Tala's great, but I even think some aspects of the ground, I think they made the mistake of preparing things with the average game in mind as opposed to the best games in mind. Maybe I'm thinking of the press box with like 20 seats, but then within a year they played Juventus, and then within 2 years the Europa League group stages, and actually the ground wasn't fit for purpose in terms of certain requirements of that. And you look at now, Tala's his women's games, 21 matches. It's a great venue in the south side of Dublin, and in the north side of Dublin, which is football's heartland in the capital in a way, it should have an equivalent venue. Like, it's not unusual. Like Batey Borisov, for example, like they have a stadium of around 10,000-12,000. They get 2,000 or 3,000 at most league games.
Right.
But when they qualify for the group stages of European competition, they have a venue, a category, I think 4 stadium or whatever it is, ready to go. And so I think you are right. Like a 20,000 white elephant, no, of course not. But I don't think you can say, well, they only get 3,000 in the game. I think the Talib model is actually perfect. And Kenny's argument was that's a good template for an argument for what you should have around the country. And to an extent, like, you know, the Munster FA have done Turner's Cross in Cork. You know, it's a different jurisdiction, so it's a complicated one, but there's been work done in Derry. But actually, I would argue they could do more. They maybe didn't even do enough. But it's just
good to hear Ireland manager interested, and why wouldn't he be, in the minutiae of Irish football. And stadium building and planning is not something managers usually talk about, because if we are talking about an entire change in structure of Irish football and the growth of the National League, facilities have to be absolutely central to that.
Yeah.
That you can improve the product, but if you want families, children, people to go to matches, they need decent facilities, which is what you have at Tala.
Yeah, and I think there's one of the positive aspects, and really it's nothing to do with his ability to do Ireland's senior job, and people will, I think there's going to be a warmth towards Kenny, just because he is, inverted commas, one of our own, you know, he's home produced. But to have an Irish manager who isn't flying in and isn't detached and isn't like Trapp saying, you know, there is no league in Ireland, and very naturally being aloof to things because this isn't what they've been paid to do. Like, their job description is just to deliver results, and I can appreciate that. But that is, like, I would often argue that, like, what Irish football has lacked and what the League of Ireland has lacked is a positive spokesperson for the league who can come out and speak and lobby for it.
And there is a clout that Stephen Kenny automatically gets with being the senior manager.
It will grow if things go better, naturally. And this is the thing, it's almost going to be a referendum on that type of manager when he's there. And there's, you can argue again over, this is one for a long way down the line, whether the fairness of that. But he has a platform there to probably use that position to make points about things, as you say, that have always bothered him. And not just to say, well, this announcement is great, thanks, you know, to the council and stuff. Say, well, actually, are we being ambitious enough? Should we aim the bar a bit higher? And I think, like, that's a positive discussion to have. People who are involved with Daily Mount will say there's reasons why it's 6,000. And I do appreciate that that's a complicated project, because you want to keep Daily Mount there, and it's in the middle of a very heavily congested area.
Yeah.
So it's not that straightforward. But the broader, bigger picture thinking of looking for better. And he did say it quite clearly, we're not going to progress as a country unless we get our stadiums and facilities right. And I completely agree with that.
We'll have a lot of time, obviously, over the coming year, 18 months, if even that, to talk about Stephen Kenny and his role, and his media dealings are something we like to talk about, but I think will actually be quite central to him in the first few months as people get used to his character and his quirks and his,
they have to get used
and
to
his
it,
personality.
Yeah.
But also that is going to be an interesting balancing act as well, that he does have very strong views around a lot of topics in Irish football. We don't know who the next CEO of Irish football is going to be, who may not appreciate his national team manager asking those sort of questions and the dynamic of that.
I don't think the previous one would have anyway. But he's smart enough as well. Like, he's not going to sort of I don't think he's going to go around fighting battles with people either. You know, at times since he's got the 21's job, he's been quite diplomatic at times in terms of how he's handled things, and even you could speculate over some call-ups around players and games and stuff like that. So I think he's clever enough, but it is a story to watch, definitely.
The new Finn Harp Stadium officially broke ground in 2008.
But it was mooted long before that.
Not expected to be completed until 2021 at the earliest.
But it was mooted long before that as well.
Just how big is this ground?
But it's the dramatic thing is the site actually does exist. Like, and Tala was a bit like that. I mean, the Tala Stadium,
6,800 capacity, Finn Harps.
Like the Tala Stadium ground, like, was sourced a long time ago, and then it lay dormant for a period of time. And Finn Harps are moving from where they are at the moment, Ballybuffet, I think, towards Stranorla, which isn't a million miles away. So the site does exist, but there's been, you know, they just haven't been able to do any work. They haven't been able to get it going. And it is a classic one where you do wonder, like, football as a sport, for all that we keep getting told the facilities have improved around the country, I mean, if people come out and speak on behalf of the FEI regime because they've improved facilities in, you know, X amount of grounds here, there and everywhere, like, the big projects, the centralised projects that serve a region, they haven't done well on that at all. It is one thing to go to Duncannon FC or whatever, and I appreciate all those clubs are very grateful for the little grants and developments that they've got. But in terms of these sort of larger scale projects, you know, that service a wider area, we haven't necessarily done a great job with that stuff in terms of stuff that strategically serve a region. Like Donegal, like could do with a venue like that. Now imagine if you had a modern venue there, and then you could actually bring maybe an under 17 or under 19 international there too, you know, and to really bring things around the place. So that's been going on for so long, and listen, it's not all on the authorities. The Finn Harps will have their own individual quirks that that have, I would presume have held things up at times, but it was just an important thing to raise in the context of what's a normal, pretty bog standard squad announcement otherwise. A lot of good players in the 91 squad. That's the that's the conclusion of that.
Every week pundits are gleefully looking forward to Ole getting sacked, and then they say how shocking it is for United to change the manager again. Jesus, cut people some slack. If he's given two proper summers to get the team he needs, then judge him. Fans will stick by him despite the press baying for more United drama to raise ratings and increase sales of newspapers, Dan.
I just think that's not true.
Manchester United not increase sales of newspapers?
I know that probably is true. Okay. I mean, you know, a bit of bad news will always go well for people, but I just think that I don't think there's a perception. I mean, I don't know if that person speaks for every Manchester United fan either, but like Ole's not going to get two more summers.
Not if they're continuing at this rate. And not if they're stuck in mid-table.
Unfortunately, like what happens actually is that to break the news cycle, sometimes the managers just get sacrificed when there's actually bigger issues maybe at a club. And it's actually the managers who use the cynical mindset to go, well, this will get the heat off us for a while. Let's dump the manager here. That does happen.
53106 is the text number. We're going to take a quick break. The latest scores in the Europa League: Arsenal 4-0 up against Standard Liège, and Celtic have scored a second against Cluj. Looks like it's going to be a very good night for Neil Lennon's side. Elyounoussi with the second at Parkhead. Quick break, and then we're talking to George Culkin about what's happening at Newcastle United.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, the greatest football partnership since Shearer and Owen.
So Arsenal still 4-0 up against Standard Liège with around a quarter of an hour left at the Emirates in the Europa League. Celtic leading Cluj by 2-0. That'll be a big result for them, particularly with Lazio and Rennes drawing 1-1 in Group E. So on Sunday we have a double header as always from the Premier League. We'll start at 2 o'clock with Southampton against Chelsea. Stephen Doyle and Alan McLaughlin will be at St Mary's. Then at 4:30 we're in the North East. Myself and David Myler will bring you Newcastle United against Manchester United. Newcastle very much in crisis under Steve Bruce after a 5-0 hammering at Leicester City last weekend left them second from bottom, just 5 points from their opening seven games. George Culkin, senior writer with The Athletic, is on the line. Evening, George.
Good evening, but may I please correct you, Newcastle United are always in crisis.
So you haven't managed to get away from covering that crisis with The Athletic. The main reason we wanted to get you on was to talk about Newcastle, but Dan really wants to do a good 10 minutes on The Athletic and wonder just how cushy a gig it is.
No, I'm just wondering, is it any more miserable now you sleep in a big bed of money every night, George? That's all.
Oh, dear. No, you shouldn't believe every rumour you read in the paper. You know that, surely, Dan.
I'm only joking, George. It's just good to hear your voice, genuinely. But Newcastle.
Well, the other obvious question you want to ask, Dan, is are they looking for an Ireland correspondent? Or
that's true. Oh, right, okay. No, I don't know. I mean,
surely, George, like, as your new job, George, like, you normally used to come to Ireland to get away from the misery of Newcastle to get the cheerful Irish beat. Like, does that still happen now, or do you get a break from that, or I don't know what happens? But
well, I would like to do that. I mean, I'm still trying to get used to it. I think we're also trying to find our rhythms and things like that. And certainly the way we cover matches is different, and sort of the deadline has gone, and just that sort of thought of just turning up and writing something and going home has gone. So that's pretty much just destroyed my entire job. I would like to sort of do Ireland matches again here and where. I think it would be a case of, you know, trying to find a subject and writing about that as opposed to sort of constantly,
doing the beat.
I mean, it's in the same way, it's similar to Premier League games. I would get in the habit of just, you know, turning up and waiting for things to happen and then kind of writing about it and going home. I mean, I know that sounds obvious, but we're trying to sort of cover things differently and trying to cover it in a different way and giving it some thought. And so I think, you know, I think the idea of me just kind of coming across to Dublin, reporting on it and going home has sort of gone. But that doesn't mean that there wouldn't be a chance to sort of do some in-depth stuff. So I would love to do that, because coming to Dublin is a proper thrill.
Thought he was going to say it was a proper session. The glory days are over, Dan.
Not the glory days are over. Not for George.
So, from a Newcastle point of view, then, there's obviously two strands to this crisis all the time. There's what happens on the pitch, and there's what's happening off the pitch with Mike Ashley. How connected are the two of them right now with how Newcastle have started this season?
Well, I think they're always connected. I mean, I think you make that point, and I think that's true. I mean, I think the bigger picture is that they've effectively had a sticking plaster over the club for the last 3 years. It doesn't take a genius to sort of work out that that's been Benitez, and he's gone. And, you know, it's sort of a bit tiresome harking back to that, maybe, but it's true. I mean, he was able to sort of connect fans, team, obviously sort of management, you know, those things together. There was still enmity towards the owner, and there were still chants aimed against him, and there was still a lot of annoyance directed in his direction. But Benitez united those kind of three strands of the club, and that was very important. And he also united the club in the sense that whilst he was there for the first 2 years, there were two very clear aims. The first aim was to get out of the Championship. The second aim was to stay up in the Premier League. It all began to fall apart last season, really, because it became clear to him and clear to everybody that sort of the chance of kicking on and progressing just wasn't going to happen. The way he saw the club was just completely different to the way that the ownership saw the club, and so that kind of parting of the ways sort of became obvious. So basically what's happening now is that we're picking up those pieces, or to be more accurate, we're not picking up those pieces. And that sticking plaster is gone, the wound is open, and it's almost like the last 3 years haven't happened. So you've got fans who are distressed, who are not turning up, who are very apathetic. You've got a team who've had this sort of huge intensity around them for 3 years, a kind of man whose great strength is detail, and that's gone, and the ownership who've almost had that sort of protection around them to a certain degree, that's gone. So it does feel pretty painful at the moment, and it's, you know, so that's the sort of off-pitch situation. And then on the pitch, it's been pretty disastrous as well. I mean, and obviously those two things are linked together.
And all that links in then to a lot of empty seats at St James's Park. Come hell or high water, that stadium generally tended to be full, no matter how bad things got. And you look at that Brighton game, and here the football was pretty dire that night. 43,000, the official attendance. It looked like there was many thousand less than that.
The sense
around the city at the moment towards the club, if Steve Bruce turns this around and gets them playing some decent football and they get some results, will the supporters come back?
Well, possibly. I mean, but I think, I mean, so the crowd will go up again on Sunday because it's Manchester United. So, I mean, there are tickets on general sale. That's pretty sort of unheard of for a game like that. But so the crowd will go back up. But, you know, to me, that feels, you know, so the first game of the season was against Arsenal. I think it was 47,000. That's when a kind of official boycott was called. And it felt like that wasn't sort of really, you know, that didn't feel like a sort of big statement. But then it's fallen in every game since then. And to get to 43, officially to get to 43, which is 9,000 down on capacity, feels like a big sort of entrenched, you know, movement. I mean, it feels like something. And I do think that's a fair reflection of where things stand at the moment, that, you know, there's that feeling again that it's kind of a work team for Mike Ashley, that, you know, that the kind of football is the thing that gets in the way of having an otherwise pleasant weekend, and people don't want to kind of, or a large number of people don't want to sort of keep funding You know, keep funding Mike Ashley, basically. Mm. So you've got that. Can Steve Bruce turn it around? Well, yeah, of course. It has not been a brilliant start. It's been a horrific start. But to me, I do think there are a sizable group of people now who have shown they're going to stay away, and that probably won't change until there's a new ownership. I mean, you can never say that, really. You can never say never, because momentum is so powerful at Newcastle. It can be powerful in a positive way, and it can be powerful in a negative way. But to me, what we've seen so far with Crowes this season does suggest that something has changed.
Yeah. How is Bruce handling it generally, George? I mean, he does seem to be quite a popular figure within the game. Maybe not as popular with supporters, but I mean, I know he's, because he's moved around clubs so much, and you know, there's always going to be a perception of him of maybe being a journeyman in the context of maybe the type of appointment Newcastle might have liked. But it just, how is he handling it generally? Because obviously there was also a lot of people that didn't want him there from the start.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, there's a few things to say there. Firstly, you know, there's been this sort of idea. I've kind of heard a lot of ex-managers and sort of pundits and people like that sort of saying, why isn't he being given a chance by Newcastle fans? And it's not that. It really isn't that. It's the fact that they see that their big chance has gone. And I think that's the anger. That's the reason for anger. They feel that their big chance has gone, and to some degree, it wouldn't matter who came in next. However, the fact is, it's Steve Bruce, a man who's been around a lot, but, you know, with the best will in the world, does not feel like a sort of ambitious, you know, sort of, you know, what's the phrase I'm looking for? Doesn't feel like a sort of, you know, you're setting your standard out there with a sort of ambitious appointment, or young, or, you know, somebody with an identity, or all that kind of stuff. In fact, he fits in pretty much perfectly with what the club have done in the past, whether it's Alan Pardew or Steve McLaren or, you know, whatever. It's much more sort of in keeping with that level of appointment. How's he handling it? He's, you know, he is a great bloke. He is handling it as you'd expect. It's sort of bouncing off him. It's within the dressing room and sort of around the place, people talk about what a good fella he is, and there's a great will for him to succeed. When results like last week happened, that, you know, that puts everything under stress, and that puts, you know, that puts everything sort of into a sort of different place. And it'll be interesting to see how they react on Sunday. I mean, you know, they're playing against a team who aren't exactly in rich form either, and you might argue that it's a sort of decent time to play them. But it will be very interesting to see what the reaction is, because having kind of called his players out after Leicester, you know, I would have always said in the past that a manager doesn't really have much room for leeway after that in terms of where he goes next. So, you know, he's handled it very well. But well, I say he's handled it very well. He's handled it as I would expect it, by, you know, allowing to sort of carry on and keep doing what he does. He's, to digress slightly, another reason why his, you know, the portrayal of him or the perception of him hasn't been great is because you've gone from this man of incredible detail and precision to sort of an avuncular figure who likes a laugh, but who's kind of quite contradictory, who's great with journalists. He kind of always wants to help you and stuff like that. But the contrast is very, very stark. You've got a man whose message was very, very clear, knew exactly what he wanted to say, full of detail, to a man, you know, to a man who's almost the opposite of that, and that doesn't look great. And the fact is, because of the fact he's not Benitez, every single word he says is kind of picked apart. So it's not fun. It's not fun around the place at the moment.
You mentioned that stress that would be on Bruce, particularly after losing 5-0 in Leicester, and he gave the players the next day off training because he simply said he didn't want to see them, he couldn't face them again, because he apparently, by all reports, absolutely tore into them after the full-time whistle, questioned the attitudes of his players, accused some of them trying to hide. It seems that he was backed very much by his captain, Jamal Lascelles, in that criticism. So it'll be interesting to see, does that get the response? Because, as you say, it's hard to know where he goes next if that's the steps he's already taken. From what he could actually achieve with this group of players. So they did spend some money finally during the summer on Joe Linton, 40 million on a new number nine. Some maximum came in for around 20 million. But you look at last season's squad, Perez 13 goals, Rondon 12 goals, both gone over the summer. Their next leading scorer was Fabian Schär, the centre half, with four goals. To go in and take over that squad, like, is it a squad when you look at it that says it's probably somewhere around 16th, 17th, 18th is where they should naturally finish?
Well, I mean, I'm searching around for three worst teams. I mean, that's my natural sort of huge Geordie optimism kicking in there. But I mean, I always do that. It's like, are the three worst teams? That, I mean, you've summed that up perfectly. They've lost their source of goals last season, and they've gone. And then one thing that Benitez always talked about was balance. And when Miguel Almiron arrived at the end of the transfer window, suddenly Newcastle had balance, and they had three people playing in those advanced positions in Rondon, Almiron, and Perez, who suddenly clicked. And at the end of that, at the start of last season, Perez was getting stick, and at the end of it, he's a £30 million footballer. Rondon, for me, okay, he's 29, 30, but he was a proper centre-forward. I'm not saying he was the best centre-forward in the world, but he was a proper centre-forward. He knew how to hold the ball up, he knew how to bring other players in, and the three of them worked together. Now, for me, the £16 million quid that Rondon would have cost, in spite of the high wages that would have come with it, and in spite of his age, that was a no-brainer. And he would have continued to make those players around him better, and he would have made the team better. So he would have increased the value of players around him, even while losing value himself. And so that is the sort of that is the dilemma, or the clash of philosophies, to use that horrible word, is the reason why Benitez left. He would not sign off on Joe Linton, a player who's cost the club, who's very young and is clearly talented in some respects, but he's cost 40 million quid in a one-horse race and is not the same kind of player. And, the thinking there, as far as I can work out, seems to be that he comes to Newcastle, scores lots of goals, and then in a couple of years' time is worth more money and they set him on. Well, that's not the way you build a team. That is the way you get relegated, because that's what happened the last time they went down. They had good players, in players like Sissoko and Wijnaldum, who've gone on to play in Champions League final, the Champions League final last season, but they were not a good team. And, they had a good team last season and the season before. It was still a relegation team, no matter what the league table tells you. And Benitez said the same thing, and the players say the same thing. It was two seasons of struggle, and they've lost the goals from it. So that is the kind of huge, that is the huge concern for me, on top of the fact that they've got a manager who's now trying to find out answers for himself, who's trying to, who had a very short pre-season and is trying to sort of, there was hopes of sort of imposing a different style of play and all that kind of thing. It's very, very, it becomes very, 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 very difficult. And it's no coincidence that Almiron now looks lost, because suddenly he doesn't have those players that he had a relationship with. And, you do that kind of thing and it can fall apart. And I realise I'm ranting on and I'm kind of wittering on. One thing I would say is that it's a very honest team, and one of the pleasures of the last few years is, or the last couple of years, is when you watch them, although it might be painful to watch them defend against Man City in the hope of kind of nicking a 0-0 or a 1-0 or even a 1-0 defeat, they're very honest. And, I don't think that's changed over the last few weeks. So they will be hurting, and there will be, I'm sure there will be a sort of determination to put things right, because it's not a bad dressing room. So that gives me a small measure of comfort.
George, just very briefly before you go, because I know your brief isn't just Newcastle, it goes to the wider northeast area. What's just happening with Middlesbrough, just briefly at the moment, because Robbie Keane has obviously gone in there with Jonathan Woodgate as part of a new project. And I don't know, some of the results have been a bit ropey. I think it was Sheffield Wednesday, they conceded four goals in the first half. Should we be worried about how things are going there?
Well, I was at the Sheffield once again, so one of the pleasures of the new job is that I get to see misery elsewhere in the North East. It's not just Newcastle, but I mean, in some ways, it's quite exciting what's being done. In, you know, it's a very young management team in Woodgate and Robbie, and I've kind of spent a bit of time around the training ground and seen them on the training pitch. They're trying to impose a new way of playing, a more, you know, they've been. Pulisified, if that's the right phrase, the last couple of years, and there isn't any money to spend, and they're trying to bring young players through. It's kind of rebuild an identity. It's, you know, I find that interesting and I find that exciting in some ways, but yeah, I've watched them and they're a long way away from being the finished article. It is definitely a work in progress, and it's going to take time. I mean, I hope they're successful because, you know, they're a young management team, and I think they'll get patient. Steve Gibson has said he'll give them time, so fingers crossed they turn it around. But it's not going to be a promotion charge there this season.
George, great stuff. Thanks for taking the call.
Pleasure to chat. Cheers.
Cheers, George.
George Culkin there, senior writer with The Athletic. When's the big transfer happening, Dan?
Cha-ching!
Nah, it's not happening. For us over here, is it? You know, it's just like,
just keep trying our best.
Just keep plowing along.
Just to be clear, though, you'd take the money and run.
Oh no, I'm very happy where I am. Very happy where I am, Nathan. Independent, chuffed.
Chuffed. There's the quote. Like, is that a denial?
No, it's not.
Interviewing a footballer.
I don't have anything to deny, Nathan. I wish I don't have anything to deny here. It's so fine. Like, I can't even be.
Took a turn there.
Just have to accept that.
Arsenal still 4-0 up against Standard Liège. Celtic leading Cluj by 2-0 in the Europa League. A reminder that we will be at St James's Park for Newcastle against Manchester United on Sunday. Southampton and Chelsea is the other live game. And on October 15th, we're going to be at the Bord Gáis Energy Theatre with Michael Lina, Brian O'Driscoll, Keith Wood, Paul Howard, Malcolm O'Kelly, Danny O'Reilly from the Coronas, and the former captain of South Africa, Bobby Skinstead. Offtheball.com/events is the place to go for tickets. It's all in association with Heineken, official worldwide partner to Rugby World Cup Japan 2019. Visit drinkaware.ie.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, the greatest football partnership since Shearer and Owen.
Just confirm again that Daniel McDonald is very happy in his current role.
Extremely happy. Trying to get me in trouble here. It's just like, obviously The Athletic has just been the talking point. It's making life uncomfortable for journalists everywhere.
Oh, yeah?
But not actually over here.
not uncomfortable, just incredibly jealous.
Yeah, the word is envious. Yeah, it's making journalists everywhere absolutely envious. Yeah.
Do you know what'll make you envious as well, Dan? That you weren't part of the latest episode of Golf Weekly, which is available to watch now on offtheball.com.
Green with envy.
On our YouTube
Golf
channel.
Weekly, you see? Green.
And if you're on the go, Dan, which I know you are, you can listen to the podcast on OTB Sports Radio and on the Go Loud app. This week, we had Peter Lawrie and Robbie Cannon in studio. Robbie is Shane Lowry's strength and conditioning coach. Together, they've been working on building up Shane's strength, endurance and flexibility. But here is Robbie explaining why weight loss is definitely not part of the plan.
Like, everyone has their biomechanics, their golf swing. And if you mess around with their mass too much, the biomechanics of their swing is going to change. In extremes lay danger. So if Shane went and lost 10 kgs, he'd probably fall out of the top 100 in the world.
Genuinely, really?
Genuinely, yeah. There has been cases in the past over the last 20 years of golfers who have lost significant mass and they've lost their games. I think Montgomery, the first year he didn't win the Order of Merit, he tried to, he lost a lot of weight.
I often wonder if that's a case of they just have to give it a bit of time to get used to their new body shape. Maybe they panic too quickly and put the weight back on.
No. Like, there's some guys, if you've never heard of again, when they've lost the weight. Like, Tim Herron lost a load of weight, lost his card, hasn't been heard of since.
So you actually don't just get used to your new slimmer size?
No, it's about change. If you change, if you have your pattern, you have your biomechanics, and if you make significant changes, it's almost like going to a new swing coach and changing your swing. It's going to have that much of an effect.
Lots of really good stuff from Robbie Cannon on the latest episode of Golf Weekly, talking about enjoying the success with Shane Lowry and also his own career as one of Ireland's leading amateur golfers. Peter Lowry there as well. Golf Weekly brought to you with thanks to La Cala, Spain's largest golf resort, Irish owned by FBD Hotels and Resorts. They've got 3 golf courses there and a UEFA standard training pitch if you fancy a break from the golf. Visit lacala.com for more details. Just like Robbie Keane, it's always been Dan's dream to write for the Indo, says Darren.
There you go. I'll stick with it. But I mean, I've been there for 13 years, so it's a long old stint. 14 years, actually.
Is it almost? 13, isn't it?
13 years, yeah.
Oh, a long time.
That's one club loyalty, actually.
Wow, it is. You're a one club man. Yeah. OTB AM, our sports breakfast show, is back tomorrow morning from 7:30 on our social channels and on OTB Sports Radio at offtheball.com. Andy Dunn in studio with Adrian Barry tomorrow. We will be back on the radio tomorrow night from 7 o'clock. Paddy Power ambassador Simon Zeebo is going to be on the show with a Friday night racing with John Duggan, Johnny Ward and Kevin O'Ryan. Dan, thank you.
Thanks, Nathan.
Tom Dunn is up next. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Good luck.
Give him a ball and a yard of grass. He'll give you a move with a perfect pass. Give him a ball and a yard of spice. He'll give you a move with guilt like your eyes. Ra-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-